This is in the matter of Joseph Rakowski. Please step forward. May we please have appearances?
Good afternoon, Chief Justice. This is Darrell Felsenstein, F-E-L-S-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, Assistant Ethics Counsel with the Office of Attorney. Good evening, Chief Justice and Associate Justice Robert Renzi-Bruce.
Mr. Rakowski? And because this is a potential disbarment matter, you will have the opportunity to present if you would like to address the board. And you'll have time to consult with Mr. Ramsey. Mr. Felsenstein, please.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. May it please the court. Before this court is the decision of the Disciplinary Review Board, which found that respondent committed numerous violations of the rules of professional conduct. The DRB concurred with the findings of the hearing panel that respondent violated RPC 1.6A, which prohibits a lawyer from revealing without consent information related to the representation of a client, RPC 1.16D, which prohibits a lawyer from asserting an issue unless the lawyer knows or reasonably believes that there is a basis in law or fact for doing so that is not frivolous, RPC 3.1, three instances, frivolous filings with no basis in law or fact, RPC 3.2, failing to treat with courtesy and consideration all persons involved in the legal process, RPC 8.4C, three instances, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, and RPC 8.4D, four instances, engaging in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. The hearing panel concurred with the OAE's request that respondent receive a six-month suspension, but the DRB believed that the aggravating factors necessitated a greater discipline, and they sought a one-year suspension with conditions to be appropriate. Respondent's counsel filed a petition for review on two points. One, respondent contends that only a trial court can determine frivolous litigation, and two, that respondent is immune from discipline for the frivolous matters under the litigation privilege. Respectfully, not even respondent's counsel believes his own petition. Respondent, through his counsel, conceded before the Disciplinary Review Board that there was no dispute with any facts and that the RPC violations were demonstrated. Respondent, through his counsel, only argued as to the quantum of discipline. Counsel conceded that the claims made by his client were, quote, repetitive and wild, end of quotes, and consisted of, quote, crazy allegations of damages. Nobody does that, end of quotes. Counsel agreed before the DRB that there were RPC 3.1 violations, and further, counsel acknowledged that the litigation privilege, quote, does not shield, end of quotes, respondent, but should be a mitigating factor. Thus, it is inappropriate in the OAE's view that respondent through counsel argues the opposite today. What we have here is an attorney who filed suit against his own client, disclosed information about that client's financial condition, and made statements which could have impacted the client in the very case that respondent had been hired to handle. An attorney who failed to protect his client in allowing a case to be dismissed. An attorney who filed numerous claims with extortionate requests for damages, claims based on unsubstantiated and unsupported claims of mental anguish. An attorney who used offensive and inflammatory language to clients. An attorney who essentially made up claims. Prior case law clearly permits a determination on frivolousness to first be made in the disciplinary setting. Frivolous in the disciplinary setting is not whether a trial court has determined frivolous, but whether in asserting a claim the attorney can reasonably believe to have a basis in law or fact. There is a whole litany of cases that provides that the litigation privilege does not protect against discipline. The litigation privilege protects an attorney from civil liability arising from words uttered in the course of judicial proceedings, but that is it. The record here, Your Honors, is clear. Respondent has violated multiple RPCs, many dealing with demeanor and honesty, as in his prior disciplinary proceedings. And as such, the OAE believes that the decision of the DRB should be left undisturbed.
Any questions for the OAE? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramsey.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. What I'd like to do is just really kind of nail down the main issue in the case. And this is really one of the quantum of discipline more than anything else. The Office of Attorney Ethics had recommended the sanctions in the range of a 3-month to 6-month suspension, which I kind of felt was reasonable under the circumstances. The DRB utilized the Iacovino decision as kind of the baseline in this case. That was a 6-month suspension for conduct that was pretty outrageous on all fours, but found that this case required double the 6-month suspension that was imposed in Iacovino. On page 80 of the DRB's decision, this really kind of frames the issue before this court. I'd like to read the following. In our view, respondent's misconduct exacerbated by compelling aggravating factors requires a lengthy term of suspension. In arriving at our conclusion, we cannot overemphasize the importance in our system of justice of a zealous advocate. An advocate's zeal, however, must be tempered and circumscribed by the limits set forth in the rules of professional conduct. Although the line between zealous advocacy and frivolous pursuit of a claim or defense may not always be a bright one, we do not view the incident matter as a close call. Respondent repeatedly crossed that line by filing extraordinary claims for damages unsupported in fact or law for no legitimate purpose but to instead to force the hand of his adversary. Now, in trying to figure this case out, I look at it kind of like a puzzle with four different pieces associated with it. Piece number one is the definition that the legislature has provided us with what constitutes a frivolous pleading. And in my brief, I've cited the statute. It's cited at 2A 15-59.1, the definition of what constitutes that is in there. And the legislature has assigned this to the judiciary to make a determination as to whether or not something constitutes a frivolous pleading. It's a judicial call. The rules of court, Rule 1:4-8, sets forth a procedure that guarantees due process for someone who's being accused of this type of misconduct. It is the prevailing party that has standing to bring this against the non-prevailing party. And I point out, and I pointed out to the DRB, that the defendant won every one of his cases. He was a prevailing party in every single one of these cases that that was brought. So the procedure set forth in the court rules require that there be notice to the person who has made this allegation, and kind of like in a contempt of court situation where you should be offered an opportunity to back down from it. The rules of court provide the opportunity, when on notice, for this individual who's made this frivolous pleading to back away from it, withdraw from it, or do something to mitigate it, okay? None of that happened in this particular case. The third piece of the puzzle, of course, is RPC 3.1, which prohibits, in civil context, frivolous pleadings. And your honors will notice the distinction between frivolous pleadings and the criminal context, as opposed to the civil context. In the criminal context, the rules are much more relaxed given the stakes that are associated with the freedom of human beings and the necessity for coming up with creative lawyering. That doesn't quite apply in the context of civil proceedings, as really under most circumstances, nobody's going to jail. Now, I will suggest to everybody, the fourth piece of this puzzle is litigation privilege. And for purposes of our argument, and as Mr. Felsenstein has indicated, there's no doubt that the allegations that my client made in his pleadings are pretty wild and crazy, okay? And he did them over and over and over again, all right? But nobody ever objected to it during the course of litigation. Nobody ever said, hey, this is, you know, you should withdraw this. It never came up. The case is settled favorably to him, okay? So it puts us in a situation where the ultimate arbiter of whether or not something was a frivolous litigation was not done by the judiciary. This was a determination made without any type of hearing on the proofs by the Disciplinary Review Board. And I think that sets a very dangerous precedent, okay? The legislature has assigned this to the judiciary as a judicial function, not a disciplinary function. You know, the way I look at it is our whole system is geared for dealing with these types of cases. People who are advocates have to feel free to allege whatever they want. They can put up all kinds of crazy things. I think the First Amendment authorizes that, provides for robust litigation and robust pleadings. But at the end of the day, if you're in trial and you've made all these crazy allegations, what's going to happen? Well, if the case goes to trial and, you know, you get a favorable result, you get past summary judgment and everything else, the jury is going to make a determination as to whether you've proved your case. If you have, great. If you haven't, you lose. If it's a default, there's a proof hearing and you have to go in front of the judge and prove your damages, okay? I dare say my client probably would have had a lot of trouble proving these damages, but we never reached that issue because the case is settled ahead of time. What I'm suggesting to your honors is that this is a situation where my client in good faith relied upon the litigation privilege, and it just was not accepted by the disciplinary review board. They, in recommending that he receive a one-year suspension from practice, that was the telling thing. That was the thing that was really most convincing to them. And they found that the his conduct was way worse than what happened in Iacobino. And I have to suggest to your honors, when you read the Iacobino case, that matter involved a long-term, complete waste of judicial resources, attacks personally and otherwise on a judge of the Superior Court, and just a complete squandering of the time of the judiciary. That didn't happen in this case at all. My client's conduct is a very far cry from Iacobino. I'm not suggesting for one second that my client is not deserving of some level of discipline. I'm just asking that it be reasonable under the circumstances.
Mr. Ramsey, is your client prepared to address the court today?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is your client prepared to address the court and answer questions today?
He'll be happy to answer any questions that the court has. I've advised him not to make any statement, but if Your Honor has a question for me, the Associate Justice, I know he'll be happy to answer.
Let me ask you this first.
Yes, sir.
The DRB came forward not only with a recommendation for discipline, but also that there be demonstration of his fitness to practice law.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a concern there?
No.
So far
and
as
that, if this court feels that that's appropriate, that's fine. That's a routine request in these types of cases. So
the reason that I ask, and you use the term wild and crazy, the phrase wild and crazy, this is quite alarming when you read what happened here. I'll take the dental practice case. I don't want to identify the dentist by name, where if I understand it correctly, Mr. Rakowski walked into a dentist's office,
right,
tried to get this dentist to serve as an expert witness for him.
Correct.
When the dentist said no, he filed a lawsuit seeking $1 million.
Well, that wasn't the basis of him asking for that. There was a dispute between the two of them. I think the police were actually called. My client was, after the dentist basically kicked him out of his office, he was downstairs. The dentist wanted him to leave. The police came. So I'm not quite sure what the altercation between them was about, but it was more than just, you know, the basis of the suit was not because he didn't want to be an expert. Apparently there were some words and phrases between them.
So he sought $1 million in emotional distress. Because of the emotional distress, he suffered from words and phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the other matter where he brought $1 million claim in damages because he alleged a client refused to pay him between $1,000 and $10,000.
Right.
And asserted that he, Mr. Rakowski, would be unable to work for the next 30 years, required physical and psychological treatment for the rest of his life, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We have not heard testimony. We're not in a position to make findings. These are alarming things. And when you add to that, that there's been no demonstration that he's accepting responsibility for what took place here, as the DRB writes in its opinion, that reasonably gives pause to somebody reviewing the plain piece of paper in front of us.
I'm really happy Your Honor brought that up because I run into this fairly frequently in disciplinary cases where there's an allegation that the defendant showed a lack of contrition for what he or she had done. And this is very hard to show contrition when you're maintaining throughout your entire defense, I didn't do anything wrong, okay? I'm protected by privilege or whatever it was. So there's no reason for a respondent in that situation to show any type of contrition. And that's what we had here. My client maintained the whole time, and in fact, to this minute, doesn't think that he did anything wrong, although the facts are the facts and the determination by both the District Ethics Committee as well as the DRB, they speak for themselves. What I'm suggesting, though, is, you know, the funny thing is, this is what I do, okay? I don't do any of that personal injury type work. But I don't know that it's ever appropriate in a routine filing in a personal injury case to put in your damages. You put in what the bare bones allegations are of your case, and then you go through the discovery process to indicate what your damages are, and you prove them at trial. The only time I think you would ever mention money is in Superior Court, you, if you had a fixed liquidated amount in a civil case they were suing for money, in small claims court, you would put it in because it's jurisdictional. You put that in your pleadings. And I think the rules of court require that in the special civil part, you put that in the, you put the amount in question in the summons. But normally, nobody would ever do this. I think it bespeaks an attorney who's really not all that experienced in drafting pleadings. And quite frankly, if he hadn't put that stuff in there and just been left to his proofs, we wouldn't be here today. But it's the fact that he put it in his proofs that got us into trouble. But as I say, the cases were all settled favorably for the respondent.
I appreciate your comment about defending everything that you've done and at the same point then getting dinged for not accepting responsibility. And I understand your comment. Our concern is protecting the public.
Oh, that's what this is all about.
And I'm left with the question, would he on another day walk into another office and dissatisfied that he didn't get an expert witness file another lawsuit for $1 million and try to get some modest settlement out of it and then claim victory?
Your Honor, nobody can predict the future. I can't imagine that happening, especially after having gone through this process. But if the court feels that some additional assurances are necessary over and above any conventional discipline the court wants to impose or thinks is appropriate, that's fine. I've explained to my client, I've told many clients, this is not about punishment. Nobody's getting punishment. It's about two things: protecting the public and deterring the attorney from future acts of misconduct. That's all this is about.
Along the same lines as the Chief Justice's question, you've noted several times that he was successful and he was successful in all the cases. Mm-hmm. And that's concerning because in addition to the outrageous and outlandish allegations and
I prefer the word crazy,
as you said, in addition to those claims in the filings, the communications that he had mm-hmm. with the parties on the other side mm-hmm. are very concerning. And it appears that in these cases, he ended up victorious because of a lot of the comments that were made and the threats that were made with regard to what will happen going forward.
I just can't imagine that happening. I really can't. I mean, after having gone through this experience and everything else.
Happened more than once.
I understand, but he wasn't through the disciplinary system like, you know, going through what we're going through right now.
Did the dentist pay money?
I'm sorry.
Did the dentist pay money to settle?
A modest settlement.
The dentist actually the dentist is in his office. A lawyer walks in, asks him to be an expert. He says no. There's words between them, and the dentist ends up mm-hmm. paying the lawyer.
I think what really triggered is my client was just outside the dentist's office, and that made the dentist nervous, and he called the police, and things kind of deteriorated from there.
Yeah, so
again, I just can't imagine anything.
Now, another settlement of $2,300. And in the case involving the client, that client also settled for a modest amount after some very concerning communications between respondent and his client that culminated in a demand for $10,000 that mm-hmm. seemingly came out of nowhere and was not backed up by a detailed of what work he had completed for that $10,000, and then followed by the lawsuit against the client, which he had threatened prior to making the demand for the money.
Your Honor, I'd like to just really kind of throw this back at the court for a second and just say, well, then what are the limitations of the litigation privilege?
Mr. Ramsey, you raised this by saying he was victorious. And I think that was.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That he won all these cases.
He did.
That's what you're saying.
They settled favorably.
You're saying there was the way it was presented. He was essentially right, and therefore there was a settlement in his favor. But mm-hmm. this, as both of my colleagues have been noting, this case. A big part of this case is using a position as attorney against people who are not attorneys and who may be intimidated by an attorney saying, if you don't settle in 5 minutes, you're going to.
Well, Your Honor, two of the defendants in this case had attorneys. In fact, I think it was the same attorney on two different cases.
No, so, I understand that. I understand that.
But the attorney said, reading between the lines, mm-hmm. you can either spend a lot of money and win, right. or you can give a very modest settlement and have this go away. And that's what they did.
These are decisions that attorneys make all the time advising their clients. But I keep coming back to this litigation privilege.
You're not saying this behavior is something that happens.
Well, maybe this court will follow the DRB's recommendation that there be some assurances that this is not going to happen again, over and above the basic discipline that you're concerned about.
I'll tell you what would be reassuring.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'll tell you what would be reassuring. You've been in front of this court many a time, and your reputation precedes today's appearance. You've told us you don't think this is going to happen again.
I do not.
Your client does not have to address the court. But that leaves a question mark as to why he did what he did and whether tomorrow he'd go out and do it again. Mm-hmm. That's the concern. And he's heard all the questions that I have.
Well, would you like to, Your Honor, like to hear from my client?
Let's see if anyone else has anything they'd like to ask. You might want to speak with him first.
He would like to make a statement to the court.
Thank you.
Your Honor, this is Joseph Rakowski, respondent.
May it please the court. Good afternoon.
Please go ahead.
Simply, I made mistakes, and this will never happen again.
When did you realize these were mistakes? After, because it happened on multiple occasions, as has been pointed out.
Thank you, Your Honor. There were certainly controversies which happened more than once, but the cases were different factually. With respect to one person who, I don't know how familiar you are with the facts of one of the cases, but a person called me up and, asked for me to represent him and gave me a fake name so I couldn't look him up. And at the end, he tried to extort me into appearing at trial for some lower amount of money than we had previously agreed. And he thought he could adopt that position because he thought I was under the impression he gave me a fake name. And so when I knew that he was trying to get me to do something for which we had not agreed, we agreed on some other amount of money, I became upset, but that happened in the heat of the moment. And so after the heat of the moment had passed, to answer Your Honor's question, I recognize then that was not a great way to respond. But
how much time passed between the incident and when you filed the complaint alleging that you would need physical and psychological treatment for the rest of your life?
Your Honor, I believe I filed the complaint the next day after that happened. And I was still upset, and I'd made mistakes, and I that's all there is to it. But there were triggering events there for which I was not equipped to deal. I mean, they were very surprising to me. And that's what sometimes that happens, and I wasn't equipped for that.
What was the triggering event with respect to the dentist whose office you entered uninvited?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was looking for an expert witness. That part's correct. After he decided that he didn't want to be the expert witness, I left the office. That part's also correct. While I was waiting outside the office, he took his cell phone and approached me and showed me that he was recording me. And I had already left the office. I had already called the Uber, and I was outside of the practice. He left he left his office, walked up to me with his cell phone, and was putting it in my face, showing me that he was video recording me. And then at that point, I was upset. So I went to the police and I filed the police report, and I used the police report as a justification to seek damages. But again, that was something there's no way I could have envisioned that could have possibly happened. I thought I was zealously advocating for my client by trying to get an expert witness in the first place. I had no idea that could possibly happen. And so when it happened, no, I did not respond in the way that maybe a lot of other people would have. And maybe some people consider that to be crazy. Now, I would not do that again. But at that time, I don't know what else to say. I was caught off guard, and I was very upset, Your Honor.
Were the allegations, factual allegations in your complaint about your alleged psychological harm false?
They were not, thank you, Your Honor. They were not false. And I don't know why representation.
Was it a fact that you needed psychological treatment? I don't have the precise language in front of me, but psychological treatment for the rest of your life.
Thank you, Your Honor. It was a fact as far as I was concerned at that time.
Did you ever get any psychological treatment in after that incident?
Yes, Your Honor. I had so much. And in fact, the Office of Attorney Ethics subpoenaed my psychiatrist for my medical records. And I said, that's a violation of HIPAA. And I don't approve of that. I don't know why Your Honors were not made aware of that, but they knew full well because they had already subpoenaed my medical records from my psychiatrist. I didn't want that to happen, but it happened nonetheless. And he just stood up here and represented to you that there was never any basis for that.
So your assertion, your factual assertion is that your psychiatric treatment arose because of this incident involving the dentist?
We discussed that, Your Honor. I mean, you know, there's more than one thing.
You put into a complaint, generally, you know, attorneys can have some leeway in complaints, but attorneys are expected to put truthful statements and complaints. And if there's something that needs discovery later, that can be dealt with. But this is a very specific allegation about the impact of this dentist incident on your life. And if you're saying it's true, it was a true allegation, then that's your representation.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I am saying that.
You never saw that psychiatrist before the incident with the dentist.
I'm not saying that, Your Honor.
No, I'm asking you that. You never saw that psychiatrist before the incident with the dentist.
I don't know when I started therapy, Your Honor, but I can tell you it wasn't one session.
I heard you mention that we talked about that incident. It sounded to me like you were being very evasive as to what, if any, kind of treatment you got following that incident with the dentist.
Perhaps that's correct, Your Honor, but...
That you were being evasive, or what you said?
Perhaps I did not want to discuss, you know, the content or my experience with my doctor. Perhaps that's correct.
No, I'm... The question is, did you go to a psychiatrist just because you had this incident with the dentist? That's why you started seeing him. That's what he was treating you for, and whatever the other ramifications were.
No, Your Honor.
Would have preferred that answer as the first answer to the question.
Mr. Rukowski, how can you assure us that this will not happen again?
Your Honor, thank you for asking me that. I can assure you that all I can say is that this has not been an easy experience, and I've been through this process for many years now, and I could have very easily acquiesced or probably engaged in some type of agreement. I did not make false statements there. And so I did not believe it then, and I do not believe it now. I'm not saying that I treated everybody in the way that I would like to be treated. I definitely didn't, and I made other mistakes. But as a result of going through this process, I understand firsthand how serious the allegations are. And I don't want to repeat this process, and I don't want to harm the public. I never thought I was harming the public, and I understand why this is necessary. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
If given everything you just said, if there was some measure of punishment, sanction in this case, what would it be for in your mind?
Thank you, Your Honor. Certainly for the, I don't remember the language, but not treating people with respect, that there's one allegation. With respect to anything that relates to the litigation privilege, there's no, and of course, it's my position that I should not be disciplined at all for that. To the extent that I would have been unable to prove my damages, okay, but that's not any reason to discipline me. So
you contend that the litigation privilege means that an attorney can never be disciplined for anything that they do during litigation?
No, Your Honor. The litigation privilege means that as long as I have a good faith belief that the argument I am making is true, I can make it without any type of fear of being punished or disciplined. That's all.
And does that mean you expect that we honor that privilege in your decision to file a complaint, which sounds like less than 24 hours after an incident where you claim $1 million of damage for psychological harm from being ejected from the front of a dentist's office by the police?
Your Honor, I do not believe I should be disciplined for that. It's not exactly how it happened. I called the police. He said he called the police, but I also called the police and obtained a police report. I don't know what basis he would have, and I don't know how much this interests you, but his lawyer represented to me that, and he also represented to me personally when he called me up to apologize, that previously there was a bomb threat and that everybody on the street was on high alert, and he was still adjusting from that bomb threat. And so he didn't directly accuse me of being a terrorist, but he was still reeling from that. And he apologized to me for the way he treated me based on that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
If
you felt that another litigant, another attorney, or somebody that you interacted with were to cause you some kind of disrespect, like you accused a dentist of in this case, would you feel entitled to sue them in a similar way that you have up till this point then?
Thank you, Your Honor. I recognize how important it is to wait before I file pleadings. That is something I would definitely do now. Thank you, Your Honor.
And in addition to the matters that we've been discussing related to this proceeding, you did admit at the hearing that you had filed similar complaints against other individuals for mental anguish, including somebody that you filed a complaint against with the same allegations, I think 2 days before the complaint filed against the dentist. So to follow up on Justice Noriega's question, is this a pattern that will continue?
Thank you, Your Honor. There is no pattern going forward. To the extent it appears to be a pattern, looking back, I can understand that. I can. But there was never a time where I filed anything which was false. Every single time where I accused somebody of causing injury to me was correct.
But you had indicated that the incident with the dentist caused your inability to work, but then admitted during your testimony that you were able to continue working and you did not stop taking clients. You did not stop working or taking clients after the issue with the dentist, but claimed you slowed down. But your allegation was you were unable to work because of the mental anguish, correct?
No, Your Honor, respectfully, no. My belief, good faith belief at the time I filed the complaint was I would not be able to work. Now, it's true, I was able to work after that, even after I filed the complaint, but in large part because I didn't let any time pass between the events and the filing of the complaint, I felt that was true.
When did the dentist call to apologize with respect to the timing of the event?
Well, after I sued him, Your Honor, and after he retained counsel. And
you sued him for $1 million and then he called to apologize?
That's basically true, Your Honor, yes. After he retained counsel. And I really didn't want, to be honest, I really didn't want an apology from him. I didn't want anything from him. I was very upset. But, he had a good lawyer and he convinced me to at least speak with him. And I did, and he apologized to me, and that went a long way.
The thing you were very upset about was the allegation that the dentist said that he was going to send some people to injure you so that you would never walk again.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so that you would never work again.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Questions? Can I give the court two more pieces of information?
Of course.
My understanding is my client does not live in New Jersey anymore. He's relocated to Florida. He's no longer engaged in the practice of law. He's an entrepreneur in Florida. He has one remaining case in New Jersey, which is scheduled for trial on the 3rd of June, and that will terminate his legal career in New Jersey, so to speak. So he's not involved in the practice of law any further.
Does he plan to maintain his license in New Jersey based
on— I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does he intend to maintain his law license in New Jersey based on what you've just said?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Is he a party to the matter in June?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is he a party in the matter that's going to be litigated in June?
He's the plaintiff. He's not a party. He represents plaintiff.
He's the— okay.
That'll be the end of his involvement in legal activities in New Jersey on a voluntary basis.
Is he otherwise currently practicing?
I'm sorry, this is the ravages of old.
No, my apologies. I was looking down when I spoke. Is he otherwise practicing now?
He's not. He's an entrepreneur in Florida.
But how has he been representing these folks that are getting ready for trial in June up to this point?
The case has been going on for 5 years. So I think they're just waiting for their trial date to happen. He's done everything that has to happen on that case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ramsey. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.